Before we get started, I want to introduce a new sponsor, Solo New York, which is one of the biggest bag brands in the company. They started in 2008 with a commitment to shake up a boring industry, and I've really been looking for a new bag. They offered me their selection, and I went with their all-star backpack duffel, which actually converts from a backpack to a duffel. You can wear it on your back if you want. It's got a handle on the top of it. It's got a handle on the side, or it's very lightweight as a backpack, and so it's a duffel that you can open from the top and almost use it like you would use a carry-on suitcase to load stuff into. It's much easier than your normal backpack where you got to just shove stuff in from the top. You can actually put clothes in there folded. They're not going to get messed up. There's also a really convenient slot for shoes that's a pretty hard shell. You can get your shoes in there. And just the space efficiency and how compact it is really impressive. I had this old gym bag, one of those shoulder gym bags. And I was like, all right, I'm going to try and replace this with the all-star backpack duffel, and it was much smaller. I'm like, wow, you know, am I gonna be able to fit everything in here? I wear a size 13 shoe, and I threw my KDs, which is what I hoop in these days. By the way, I got my age 38 Duncan, so I'm feeling good about that. But I was able to slide those into the shoe compartment, and there's still plenty of room in there for stuff to go to the gym with. It's very lightweight, as I mentioned, fit into the gym locker easily. Outside pockets as well, which are extremely convenient. There are pockets inside the main compartment that you open from the top. I highly recommend checking out their selection of bags. They have YouTube videos of the bags as well, so you can see exactly how they're used, where all the compartments are. And then the quality is outstanding. I think like the zippers even have these extremely resilient and easy to grab pulls on them. You know, that's the kind of thing that can break over the long term. I thought the quality of those was really good. So the way to get started with them is solo-newyork.com/capspace. Easy to remember. So we talk about it all the time in the program. That's solo-newyork.com/capspace, and that'll get you 25% off from their hundreds of designs. Once again, solo-ny.com/capspace to get that 25% off, and use that /capspace URL to let them know that you came from us. It was looking like it was going to be a totally boring first full day of free agency. It was about 5 p.m. Pacific. Nothing had happened, and then LeBron James signed with the LA Lakers, a tweet released by his agency Clutch Sports, an official announcement with more detail, I'm sure, will be coming in a few days. But LeBron James will be a Los Angeles Laker next season. LeBron signing on in perhaps the biggest surprise, 4 years, a 3+1 for the max, a little under $154 million. And then they had a flurry of moves after that as well. So what are your initial thoughts here?
I mean, it's absolutely massive for the landscape of the league. It is very interesting that it sounds like LeBron committed to the Lakers without securing the commitment of another star player, whether that be through free agency or through a trade. You know, that certainly could still happen. They have the flexibility to do so. But LeBron James is a Laker for a while now, and I think this might be looking a little bit more towards the long term, especially with some of the other moves they made, which we'll talk about in due time. But this is where we start. But what I'm most interested in, beyond all of the big, you know, basketball questions about how LeBron fits with this team, whoever's left and everything else, is the idea of timing here. Because parts of this look to me like they're playing a kind of a 2-year game in terms of securing talent, because the Lakers could clear out, they have about $27 million, the last number I put out, next season in space, and they could clear a whole lot more quickly using Luol Deng either for trading or stretching purposes. So that's one way of doing this. And I could certainly see an argument. I could see them going to, let's say, the San Antonio Spurs and saying, we don't need to give you the world for Kawhi because we can just sign him next summer. But LeBron James is 33 years old, turning 34 in December of this year. And there is also a pressure to be the best team you can be as long as he's here, because even though he seems indestructible, we know how this process works in totality. And I'm interested to see how the Lakers try to square that circle.
Yeah, LeBron has spoiled us with his longevity to date, the performance that he put on in the playoffs last year until injuring his hand, a circumstance of his own making, of course, but was an argument, at least, for the greatest playoffs that anyone has ever had. Certainly the greatest conference playoffs that anyone has ever had. And so he is there right now, but we don't know how long it's going to continue. I want to talk about this a little bit from a basketball perspective. First here, we'll go through some of the other moves that they made as well, because I really want to get to what this Laker team is going to look like, because it is, as you are so fond of saying, an island of misfit toys to some degree at this point. So after LeBron agreed, they had about $25 million in space to work with, including the cap hold for Julius Randle, which is $12.4 million. They could take that off whenever they want to, basically, unless he signs his qualifying offer, which I'm sure they'd be totally ecstatic about. That qualifying offer is, I don't have the exact number offhand, but it's, you know, like $6 million or something. And they immediately signed Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, who played for $18 million or so last year, to a 1-year $12 million deal. He will have an implied no trade clause because it's his second year in a row on the team. If they traded him, he would lose his early bird rights. And I think he was, if not the best shooting guard left on the market, close to it. JJ Redick and KCP both out there. Redick likes being and Avery Bradley both out there. Redick likes being in the East Coast. KCP younger, has been healthier than Bradley, has already been in LA, obviously a Clutch Sports client as well. But 1 year, $12 million for KCP, that's a totally good number. I think he a pretty good fit with LeBron, can play off the ball, can get out in transition, can shoot the ball, very solid defensive player. So that put them down to $13.8 million in space if they wanted to move on from Randle, but basically they're out of space unless they move on from Randle at this point, or he takes the qualifying offer, which won't happen for quite some time if he does. But then they went and use the room exception, granted for only 1 year, so you wonder how powerful that is, but still you would think they could have done a little better, to me, especially in terms of fit, than Lance Stephenson.
Right, this is a part of what was so intriguing to me about the idea of near term versus long term, is I don't see Lance as being particularly useful to Cleveland in either timelines. You know,
Lakers,
not a bad
the
player.
Lakers, it's our first slip. You called him Cleveland.
Oh, whoops. I know, because it feels like a Cleveland signing to me, of getting a guy who is not a bad player, for sure.
Oh, I disagree. I think it's a Cleveland signing. The guy at least would have been able to shoot.
Maybe. But, I mean, with Lance, this is kind of the idea of defining success for me. If what the Lakers are trying to do is be a competitive team and, you know, win a fair number of games next year and bring in, talent that can do some things, sure, Lance could be a part of that. I would play him less with LeBron than with LeBron for a couple of reasons. But Lance Stephenson, to me, has some really big problems against the best of the best, because you can exploit some of his proclivities offensively. And then defensively, he's a good player, but he's not really suited to guard the dominant players, which are overwhelmingly on the best teams. So it's a strange move for me there, especially when you think about the context that there is still the possibility, certainly a possibility, could even be stronger than that, that the Lakers acquire Kawhi Leonard this year. And what you need next to Kawhi and LeBron is meaningfully different than what you need next to LeBron.
Well, here's the other reason why it's so weird. Even if you don't acquire Kawhi Leonard, the other players you have are Julius Randle, potentially could be back, can't shoot outside of 3 feet. Brandon Ingram can't shoot. Lonzo Ball, maybe he'll be able to shoot, but he sure as hell couldn't shoot last year. All those guys also need to have the ball in their hands as well. Lance needs to have the ball in his hands to have whatever limited amount of effectiveness he can have. And then LeBron James kind of needs to have the ball in his hands as well. Even Kyle Kuzma is a good shooter off the ball, but a guy who probably needs to have the ball to some degree. I mean, Josh Hart is really their only guy right now who really is a good off-ball player, he and KCP. And also, Josh Hart, is Lance now going to take Josh Hart's minutes? Like, Josh Hart, I think Josh Hart might be better than Lance Stephenson next year. He can at least shoot. He's probably a more disciplined, harder playing defender. Lance can read some good moments on defense, but I don't think he's that great overall because he's too spacey. So, I mean, you have two good shooting guards already, and so you bring in Lance. I mean, is he going to play the three? Well, Brandon Ingram plays the three, and LeBron is going to play some three. This really just seems like, they have plenty of guys who can defend already on this team, and that's, to me, is the only reason you would bring Lance in, is because already he can switch and he's kind of rugged defensively. I mean, I could name probably 10 guys right now off the free agent list that I would rather have tried to get, even when you consider that it's only 1 year on the room exception. I think they could have done a lot better. And then they also signed JaVale McGee for the minimum. That's fine. Now, both of these don't impact their cap space right now because they're just going to sign them using exceptions after they use up the rest of their cap space. But I don't really understand. McGee, I understand. I mean, if you want to have him play a similar role as with the Warriors, maybe even start at center, not finish the game. Randall will probably finish the game. Maybe you can play LeBron at center to finish the game. And they should have a very switchy lineup. You know, I mean, that's part of where maybe Stevenson comes into the theory, and Luke Walton, of course, very adept at using switching lineups both last year with the Lakers and then going back to his time with the Warriors. So I think this team could be pretty good on defense when JaVale's not playing. So JaVale, you know, he could play a similar role with the Warriors. That's fine for the veterans minimum. No problems there. Maybe we'll see who else might have been available. You know, that might have promised him a little bit bigger of a role than if there are other players available. But remember LeBron's quote in the finals of like, oh yeah, you know, to compete with Golden State, you really need just like the absolute smartest players. And yeah, Lance and JaVale would not be at the top of my list there. Or nor would KCP necessarily, even though I do like him as a player.
KCP can certainly be a gunner at moments in time. And yeah, I wonder a little bit about what this team is going to be. And it's also worth noting that Caldwell Pope has that implicit no trade clause. And theoretically, if Randall picked up signed his qualifying offer, he would as well. I don't expect Randall to do that. I think they'll get something done. But that makes it harder to do salary filler. And Lance theoretically could be a part of that. I mean, you could make an argument that he didn't sign for that purpose. That would have to be December 15th. So it would be really painful for the Lakers to get Kawhi in the immediate, unless Luol Deng was included in the deal. And the problem there is that Luol Deng is a massive negative asset. So either you're sending him to a third party and giving them stuff, or you're sending him to the Spurs and sending them even more. And both of those are challenging. And maybe the Lakers are playing this long game of we can get him next year. That's totally fine. And then the Spurs can do what they will. You know, they could end up getting a decent rental offer or whatever happens. But it is just a strange thing. Like, if you're thinking about, okay, what is this? Like, look, you have to kind of treat this Lakers team now as a possible finished entity. It's not what I expect it to be, but it's somewhat close. And to me, this is a team that has some potential. And I think LeBron can bring a lot out of them, and defensively, as you mentioned, they could do some things, but I don't see them as being better or even really particularly, you know, like close in terms of regular, let's call it regular season net rating, you know, that idea, to the Rockets or the Warriors. And the Rockets have some foibles. We've talked about this before in the playoffs due to their specific talent and the isolation reliance. But this Lakers team has similar, has problems too that are going to have to be reconciled. They can be, but they have to be.
Yeah. I agree with that a lot. And, you know, we've got season previews to talk about this team. We'll have a little bit better idea. Let's return to the Kawhi pursuit. However, Woj reiterating shortly after LeBron signed that Kawhi's focus is still on being a Laker. You mentioned 2019. If they don't sign any contracts that go into 2019, which it seems unlikely that they will have a draft pick there that'll reduce this slightly. But as of now, they're looking at $26 million in space. If they don't stretch Deng this year, they could do so next year. That would get them up over where they need to be, which Kawhi's max right now, you might have mentioned it, $32.7 million is where it projects on that $109 million cap, 30% of that. So they could get him outright as a free agent. You mentioned, though, the idea that maybe he could go to Philly, and there was a little reporting that maybe Kawhi would be open to Philly. There's some reporting back a few months ago that like that might be one of his preferred destinations. Boston not been really on that list. And so Philly, you know, we'll see. They supposedly have been unwilling to include Markelle Fultz so far, which means, you know, if it's Šarić and Covington and a first, at that point, if you're San Antonio, like that's not enough. That you would rather just hold on to him for a year and be good this year and just let him go after a year, and then see if you can rehabilitate him and he makes all NBA and you can sign him at the end of the year to the Supermax. So there is the option of just getting him in free agency next year. Although if you do that, and then you just better hope that Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram and Kuzma and Hart either develop, or you can then try to trade those guys, maybe including Deng as well for some salary filler if you haven't had to stretch him already. Now, let's say they get Kawhi now, and we'll talk about what the math behind getting that and how much they should offer. All right, but let's say they do get him. You're basically in almost the exact same situation cap-wise next year, because to use his bird rights, his cap hold will be a little bit less than $32 million. It'll be a little bit over $30 million. He's making 20 this year, so 1.5 times that for with them having full bird rights on him. So you're basically not going to have any more space, even if you acquire him now. Yeah, he's only making $20 million now. And what it really would have been great is if they could have acquired LeBron, gotten Kawhi now while he only counted for $20 million by sending out salary, and then still having a bunch of cap space left. But that now, once Kawhi goes up to his max hold next year, or pretty close to it, you're not going to have that flexibility. So, and now they've brought back KCP already as well, and Paul George, of course, has signed. So really, the path to getting a third max guy is difficult. Maybe you trade the entire kitchen sink of Ball and Ingram. There's someone who's available that you could get. You know, maybe it's like Anthony Davis or maybe a sign and trade could be possible for one of the guys who's a 2019 free agent. But you're not going to have the space if you get Kawhi this year and re-sign him to just go right out in the marketplace and get a max free agent as well, unless you just completely clear the decks, and even then it would be difficult. So that's where they are now. What do you think they should I guess one more thing I can say too about this is, if they want to trade for Kawhi now, they got to put together $16,079,000 worth of salary. If you don't include Deng, that means Ingram and Ball have to be in the deal, at least as of now. You know, some of these guys that they signed could be traded as of December 15th. That could change this. So Ingram and Ball, and then two of Ivica Zubac, Kyle Kuzma, and Josh Hart just barely gets you there to have enough salary to trade for Kawhi Leonard. Another option would be that they work in Deng somehow, but that's such a bad contract that goes another year. You could maybe do the like Keith Bogan sign and trade of like, well, actually, no, you couldn't do that anymore because unless they moved on from Randall, because they would have to do that very early, then they could sign and trade Isaiah Thomas or Channing Frye or Brook Lopez. They'd be able to maintain the bird rights to one of those players. They can't do that, though, if they hold on to Randall. So maybe it would be a sign and trade of Randall, but the Spurs would have to want Randall. Doesn't really seem like a Spurs kind of player, and Randall would want to have to go there, and the Spurs would have to be willing to pay up. So it's probably either, as of now, if the trade is going to happen this summer, you either got to work in Luol Deng, which, you know, now you have to include even more assets because the Spurs are taking on Deng, or you got to give up essentially everyone except for either Kuzma or Hart. So that's tough. That's the kitchen sink. And I'll turn to you now, Dan. I know I've gone on for a long time with this financial stuff, but would you just do it? I mean, we've talked about this before, but now they do have LeBron James. Would you just do it? Would you trade basically all those guys to get Kawhi Leonard right now, knowing then, though, that going into next summer, you're probably not going to have space for a max guy even then?
I would not do that trade at this point. It's too much to give up. The uncertainty with Kawhi, they might have more certainty than we do with the access to medical information. Maybe they could see him work out or something like that. But knowing what we know right now, I would not, especially because they have a good chance of signing him as a free agent. You know, there is certainly a much greater than zero chance that he signs somewhere else, either through a trade or just falling out of love. But I think that's way too much risk to take on, and it also lowers the ceiling of the team. And I'm sure some people are going to dig in this well of Oklahoma City signed Paul George, therefore all of these teams need to have so much confidence that they can make these moves and you know, the guy's going to come back. There certainly are circumstances, but you need to remember that every player is different, how they react to the circumstance. You and I both talked about on last night's show about how we disagreed on with Paul George's decision from a basketball perspective. Obviously, he's a human being, can make whatever decision he wants. But even if it's not Kawhi, I feel like they could get somebody else good that year, maybe not as good as Kawhi. And so giving up everything for a bill of goods that you're not completely sure of, and foreclosing on all these other possibilities, and he wouldn't have to make any sort of commitment right now, I just don't think that makes any sense, or doesn't make much sense. It makes some sense, it just doesn't make enough sense.
Yeah, and the timing here is difficult, because again, you're now at the point where the fact that the Kawhi is only making $20 million this year, like, can't really be utilized in your favor anymore to get more players. Now, we mentioned, of course, you know, he's locked in for at least 3 years. He said he's even, you know, to Stephen A. Smith reported that it even, you know, the commitment in theory is for even beyond that. And you can say, hey, you know, there's so much urgency here. He's 33. How much longer is he going to be playing at this level? But also, there's a chance that Houston and Golden State, the two teams where you're like, okay, we just can't beat these guys right now, those teams are in theory going to be getting worse. Klay Thompson, a free agent, Kevin Durant, a free agent next summer, and just, you know, Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, Draymond Green, Klay Thompson, all probably not going to be as good next year as they were this year. Chris Paul, James Harden, you know, those guys are on the wrong side of the aging curve. The Rockets just lost Trevor Ariza. So maybe you are, even if LeBron is a little worse in 2019-20, you're in a better position just because the competition isn't as bad. Now in the East, Boston, Philly are on the come, but, you know, they're not as immediate of a problem for them. So, you know, I think unless I could get the Spurs to take Deng or work some kind of a sign and trade, I'm probably not going to make that deal as of now. And, you know, the real urgency, of course, to do it was when not only the thought was that you needed Kawhi to get LeBron, but then also that you could then bring in another guy, or at least, you know, fill in around them with more space. And now that option is really gone. So the Lakers don't have much urgency here. And maybe the Spurs will see, who knows what exactly was offered. But it may be for the Spurs that the Lakers offer never gets any better. There's also the chance, of course. I mean, if Kawhi goes to another good team like Philly or Boston, you know, I would say it's 50-50 or better that he stays there, because they could, they're going to be awesome, assuming that he stays healthy. So, and they'd be able to offer the fifth year. You don't know what his health situation is going to be either. That fifth year could end up really meaning something to him as of that point. So that's definitely a concern. The Lakers, in theory, are still going to have to outbid Philly and outbid Boston. You know, I would be pretty scared if he goes there. But you mentioned also they'll probably be, you would think, the number one destination. They'll have LeBron. I'm not sure that guys want to play with LeBron maybe as much as LeBron thinks they do, because it can be difficult to play with him. We've seen, you know, Kyrie left him, obviously, although that's looking like a great decision now. You know, he would have been left holding the bag in Cleveland. So a lot of moving parts, but I think I would be pretty judicious as of this point. You're also, another concern though you have as the Lakers is, well, how good are Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram going to look next to LeBron? I think they're probably going to look worse, frankly, especially with Ball coming off of this knee surgery now. And, you know, there's talk that the Spurs don't want Ball. Okay, you could probably route him to a third team potentially. I mean, Ingram just has to be in the deal. There's just no way this deal gets done without Ingram. They can also throw in future first rounders as well. Maybe they could find a way. There's talk they might take on a bad contract.
Yeah. And those first rounders are less valuable right now, for sure. Like we already would have priced that in. Competent teams would have, because that's why you're doing this deal. But still, it's worth noting.
That said, I mean, I don't want to be too down on this for the Lakers. I mean, every Lakers fan has got to be pretty ecstatic. They're adding LeBron to a 35 win team. Some of the guys who got under those 35 wins won't be there anymore. But you can hope for growth from the young guys. Yeah, I think the fit is going to be bad offense. I think they're going to be pretty good defensively and offensively. I would expect LeBron to have the least efficient season we've seen from him in some time, just due to the lack of spacing. And, you know, we'll see. Maybe they still got $12 million. They might do something with Randall. How would you approach Randall's situation now? That's a good question.
Oh, one other note I want to make quickly. Another way that they could get a little bit of cap filler that I didn't hear you mention, I might have just missed it, is in a month they could trade Mo Wagner, and that's another way to get some of that small money. So maybe they could. I haven't done the exact numbers on it, but that would allow them to get pretty close to maybe not having to use Kuzma or Hart, but still Ball and Ingram, whole hell of a lot to give up. But so with Julius Randle, actually, just before we started recording, was writing a piece for The Athletic Los Angeles and spent a paragraph talking about this. And I think what you're trying to do is toe the line between hardball and trying not to get him to take the qualifying offer, though you're not, it's not the worst thing in the world, to be clear. But
you'd be willing to go more than 1 year?
I would, if it was a deal that I was completely confident was tradable.
Well, you could never be that. I don't know what that, because he could get injured.
Well, like, let's say if it was, you know, 7 or 8 mil, where more likely than not, you know, not as a guarantee, but more likely than not that another team would be willing to take it on. So
yeah, or maybe low enough that if you absolutely had to, you could stretch it, or, you know, if you had to give up a first round to get out. Yeah, but I mean, but you're talking about something that's like below 8 figures a year, which is never going to sign.
Yes, right. And so, but that's what I would do, is I would make it at a term and say, this is what we're happy with. And then if he gets something higher than that, which the answer is almost definitely at this point, he can't. I mean, unless another team just is trolling or something, which is kind of stupid on their part, unless they have a clear vision for what Randall would be. So I would play pretty hardball with him, because Randall, a very good player, a guy that I like, that I really impressed me with his growth this past year, but not a great fit with LeBron James because of the lack of spacing.
I think defensively is a good fit, actually, because they're probably going to switch, and he can do that. Offensively, I agree with you. It's terrible.
But like as a recovery, like as a pure switch guy, yeah. But I think with LeBron, especially as he ages, you're going to want somebody who can recover a little bit better, just because you're going to need a little bit more of a presence at the rim. And I don't trust that Randall's going to be able to do that. So I don't think that you're looking at him as a foundational piece anymore. I don't think he's a foundational piece with LeBron James. Granted, I felt that way before, and Lakers fans didn't like it, but whatever, don't care. And so you play it like that, and you say if you can get a better deal, if these are the terms that we're kind of thinking about, and our offer is only basically going to drop with time. You could try to play that game if you want, but of course there's a threshold. And then if he takes the qualifying offer, so be it. You know, like that's not the worst thing in the world. The worst thing would be matching or signing a really big contract, and the Lakers can just take that out of play by saying that's the worst case scenario. Everything else is better than that.
I think this would be my approach. I would actively look for something better to do this year with that $12 million. Like you said, very unlikely that they can reach a long-term agreement. Even next year, he's still essentially a fall bet at a contract that he's going to want, which is probably going to have to start at, you know, maybe if you're lucky, $14 million a year, $13 million a year, something like that. Because remember, Happy Day is going to be here again for free agents in these coming years. And Randall had a very nice year. I think he's a guy who's a very unique matchup who has a lot of applications potentially. So let's say even if you get him on a one-year deal this year, right? I mean, I think the fallback would be, hey, we've got your full bird rights. It's not going to impact our cap space at all. As long as we don't go into the tax, hey, we'll just pay you all the way up to the max even. You know, maybe you don't want to do that just because it's money, but, you know, we'll give you a one-year deal just to get you to sign and be happy and play ball this year and not drag out this qualifying offer thing forever. But even then, if you keep him around and you're happy, he's happy on a one-year deal, he's like, you know, probably plan G in the summer of 2019. And again, you know, he's not going to have a low enough cap hold anymore that you can kind of keep him around and still have room to do some of the significant things that you want to do. So I would say, and as I said already, I mean, they got Ingram, they got Ball, they just got Lance Stephenson. LeBron is not an amazing shooter. He's got to have the ball in his hands. You just need better shooting. And so Randall, to me, my first approach would be, all right, we'll keep his qualifying offer on the books for now. You might have a decision to make at the deadline, but presumably you'll know at that point of the deadline to withdraw it, which is in mid-July, but presumably you'll know at that point whether you can do better than him. Here's who I might be looking at that I think, you know, and we're talking about a one-year $13 million deal essentially now, that if you pull the qualifying offer from Randall, you certainly would call JJ Redick, probably wants to stay on the East Coast. Avery Bradley could be an interesting one. They have a lot of shooting guards, but that's okay. You know, he at least can play at center. You know, it's tough. There's not that many guys there. Brook Lopez, maybe he could return just due to his shooting, although defensively it's an issue. Derek Favors, you could certainly look at. But he's supposed to decide tomorrow on going back to the Jazz or not. But I think Favors would be a better fit than Randall. At least could be more of a pick and roll center, protect the rim a little bit more. Certainly you would ask if DeMarcus Cousins would be interested in coming to play for that much. We'll see what the Pels offer is. They'll probably beat that though. Or I might even just try to break it up into some other guys who can shoot a little bit. You know, Wayne Ellington, you might want to see what the price is on Seth Curry, although that wouldn't cost much. But they got to get some shooting on this roster. Maybe bring back Channing Frye, though he might be another minimum guy. Anthony Tolliver be someone that they could look at. And Randall is definitely better than all those guys I'm talking about here, for sure, other than maybe DeMarcus and Favors. But it just, the fit is just so bad. I mean, and with him very unlikely to be a part of the long-term plan. Now, if you could get, maybe you could sign and trade him and get someone back who can play in a sign and trade. Again, I don't know where that's going to be.
That's exactly where I was going to go.
Do you have an idea for that? Or, I haven't looked at that really that closely yet.
I don't have one yet, but what I do have is the concept of what a deal would be. You brought up bringing back a guy who can play. The other way to do that would be to bring back some sort of other asset that you can flip into something else. So that could be maybe you get a late first round pick or a good second or something like that. You would also have to have it as a deal in the requirement in the deal that we are not taking back any salary from beyond the season. And they could do that pretty easily just as a demand. Whether or not another team can meet it is an open question, but it gets into something that is very important to understand around the league, which is this lack of demand for centers. I mean, there just aren't that many teams that are beating the doors down, as good as Julius Randle is, for a guy like Julius Randle. And especially if you're narrowing the field of matching salary to only guys that are expiring this coming season. I mean, maybe you could find something. I mean, maybe you could even talk to a team like Sacramento, and just if they, for whatever reason, they like him better than all of their guys, maybe you could do something like that. But there just aren't that many teams that are champing at the bit to get Randle as good as he is.
Yeah. So maybe Avery Bradley would probably be my number one target, just because he can shoot, he can defend the other team's point guard. If Lonzo just is shooting too poorly, or he's going to be injured for part of the season, he can start at point guard basically. But they have enough guys with Ingram and LeBron and Lance who can handle the ball already, so Bradley wouldn't have to handle the ball too much. I might look to see if Shabazz Napier were available, and you know, with him being non-tendered by the Blazers, he's unrestricted. He can play off the ball and shoot. I mentioned Seth Curry as a potential option. They'll need a backup point guard in theory, but yeah, they just need shooting in the worst way on this team.
Well, and then if they need shooting, there's a perfect fit who might end up being on the buyout market, Carmelo Anthony.
Oh man, I mean, yeah, this is.
I feel like that's happening. I don't know anything. It just intuitively to me feels like that's going to happen.
Hmm. David West might be an intriguing option for this team too, if he doesn't go back to Golden State. And I definitely think for the regular season, they should really, you wouldn't want to pay him much more than the minimum, but to bring back Channing Frye, I think, you know, especially since he's got a chemistry with LeBron, and just, again, they got to just get somebody on this team who can shoot the ball. Even with his defensive limitations. Yeah.
I think the other part of this, which is a mix of Lakers' perspective and the other thing we need to talk about with the LeBron decision, the other big, big thing to talk about, is the path that it took to get to this point. And so really that starts with Magic and Pelinka taking over from Buss and Kupchak. And a lot of the early stuff was cleaning up their messes. That was using D'Angelo Russell as the primary asset to unload Timofey Mozgov's contract. Mozgov would still be on the books for an additional two seasons, would have made that a big constraint to deal with right now. They would have had to give up some assets. And they also, in that trade, got the pick, which eventually became Kuzma. Now, they could have drafted Kuzma with the other pick that became Josh Hart. They could have done a couple other things, but they got those in that deal. And then the other massive trade, which I feel like our analysis of this is looking better than other people's, which doesn't always happen, but in this case it does, which was the monumentally short-sighted, you could say justifiably so, trade that the Cavs made with the Lakers, which had two big impacts in terms of this signing. One, Jordan Clarkson's contract going off the books. You know, the Lakers got back expiring salary. That money is important, but you could call that KCP's money if you want. You can call it whatever. And also getting a first round pick. They drafted Mo Wagner with it, but they got a first round pick out of that deal. And so the Lakers needed to get more breathing room, to get flexibility in order to make this palatable, to make this possible. And they did so.
The other thing, too, that was huge was that D'Angelo Russell trade. And there are certainly plenty of Lakers fans and Lakers analysts who were like, oh, my God, D'Angelo Russell, like, he's going to be so good. He runs such a good pick and roll. He was the number two pick. He was the future. Like, we just traded him just to get off of money. Well, number one, they got Kyle Kuzma, or the pick that eventually became Kuzma in that deal. Although, obviously, no one knew what he was going to be. You have to evaluate it as if it was just a random, you know, 28th, 27th pick, whichever it was. I forget the exact series of transactions that led them to 27, but that was a great deal. I mean, that's the one where really, I mean, the Clarkson one, yeah, they got off of, I think, his $12.5 million for this year, but they still would have actually had the room for LeBron. I think with Mozgov in the books, I don't know if they even, and Russell as well, I don't think they even would have had space for LeBron. Maybe they could have made that trade, but you know, Russell had a pretty rough year. His value is a lot lower now than it was back then. I don't know if you could get off of a Mozgov or a Dang just by including Russell now the way you could back then. So that, I think, was a really great proactive trade. And I think even going back further, trade deadline 2017, you remember that it looked like Mitch Kupchak was going to try and make a trade with Jim Buss, continuing to try and save their jobs after the terrible Mozgov and Dang signings and Clarkson signing. And Jeannie Buss found out about that and stepped in and said, no, you know what? We're not giving you to the end of the season. I'm taking this from you right now. Magic Johnson is coming in. He is going to be running our trade deadline. They were able to trade away Lou Williams for a pick. That ended up being Josh Hart. Good job there. And I admit very early on to being openly skeptical of Magic Johnson. Pelinka, Kobe's former agent, certainly seemed like kind of a nepotism type of hire. Magic Johnson never seemed to be that amazing on TV. Well, certainly it appears that Magic played a key role in closing the deal with LeBron yesterday, although that's always kind of overblown. Oh, wow, he really convinced him in the meeting. It's like, no, I think he probably pretty much had his mind made up before then. And just, you got to just not blow it if you're Magic Johnson at that point. But he didn't. And I was skeptical. And really, outside of drafting Lonzo Ball number two, which I think pretty much everyone was on board with as essentially a no-brainer, and I admit that Ball was number two on my board, though I kind of still felt lower on him even at the time he was drafted than others, and I remain skeptical of him. But other than that draft pick, pretty much every move they've made has worked out incredibly well. And so Jeannie Buss deserves a lot of credit for bringing them in, and they of course deserve credit for the way they've totally remade the franchise here. And you know, is really like, is LeBron James, I mean, he had a chance to come to LA once, he went back to Cleveland in 2014, but is he here with like bumbling Mitch Kupchak, who like, you know, refuses to even play the game of kind of the pre July 1st tampering, and Jim Buss, and you know, who's just like kind of socially awkward and stuff, or is he here with Magic Johnson? I mean, we know he's here with Magic Johnson, probably wouldn't have been here with Jim Buss still around. So Jeannie did the right thing in getting rid of those guys.
Agreed wholeheartedly. They've done a wonderful job so far, very 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 few missteps and a lot of home runs, which is incredible, and I give them full credit for it. There is one other thing that we should talk about with respect to this, and it's a question you asked on Twitter, which is, how many championships will LeBron James win as a Los Angeles Laker?
Yeah, so the poll, actually, let me check it now. I had to scroll past all my tweets of our Patreon posts. We've done another probably 15 or so of those, updating in real time all of these signings with our salary sheets. We've got the list of all the remaining free agents, including who's signed, ranked, separated by restricted and unrestricted. We've also got our summary of all the cap room left in the NBA for all the teams. I actually updated that to include my projection of what exceptions teams that are over the cap might use. But here's that poll. 7,200 votes, 49% say that LeBron will win zero championships with the Lakers, 30% say that he will win one, 13% say two, and 8% say three plus. And I think actually that wisdom of crowds, that pretty neatly encapsulates for me, 49% zero, 30% one, and then two and above, 20%. I might put the two and above even lower than 20% overall, but that's pretty close to, I think, what the distribution of the outcomes might be.
Yeah, I mean, what you talked about earlier with the difficulty of getting a third star there, unless one develops on their roster, which is the other possibility here, is that, you know, Ball or Ingram or somebody that they could acquire for Ball and Ingram, if it's not Lonzo, if it's not Kawhi Leonard, becomes that guy. But there are strong teams, even if they're aging, and LeBron at some point is going to become at least somewhat of a mortal, and so that will be a challenge for them. You know, they'll have to deal with that, and we already saw him take a big step back in terms of regular season defense, and then the playoffs, I thought he was spectacular offensively, and he picked his spots defensively, but he didn't have his fastball for most of it. Maybe the hand related to that, who knows. But yeah, I would say zero is the most likely outcome, but there's a significant chance of one or more as well, and I'm excited to see where this goes. And actually, I guess the last thing before we move on to
I've got a couple more, but feel free.
Okay. It's just where, I mean, the disparity between the conferences now, not only in terms of star talent, but in terms of top teams, is pretty remarkable.
Yeah. Fortunately, Boston and Philly, and I mean, the big winners here, Boston is the biggest one to get LeBron out of the conference. The Raptors, won 59 games last year, right? I mean, they have a new coach, but they should be able to be around, and maybe they can just break the curse against a team like Boston or Philly that they just match up a little bit better against. So yeah, all those teams in the East, hey, if the Bucks weren't so intent on just making terrible signings, they might even be rejoicing right now. But yeah, that conference disparity, I mean, there's going to be probably some more momentum for the reseeding now of either, okay, 8 teams from each conference get in, but then you reseed, or maybe reseeding once you get to the conference finals and the travel can be less of an issue. They can just space it out a little bit more the same way they do during the NBA finals. Another question along the lines of the championship question. The Lakers have these four youngs right now: Ball, Ingram, Kuzma, and Hart. How many of those guys?
We're not counting Randall.
Well, he's not even under contract. No, I'm not counting him.
Okay.
How many of those guys are on the team after next summer's moves, and who is the most likely to not be on the team?
This is pretty much off the cuff.
Yeah.
But I'm going to say most likely is that two stay, two leave. I don't know if that's in the Kawhi trade or if that's in just changing things around. And I would say say most likely to stay. I don't know why I feel like it might end up being Josh Hart just because...
He just fits well.
Like, if it's a cool...
He fits well. And he's also just not going to be as coveted.
And I don't think teams are going to demand him. I don't think you're going to... Let's say they're trading for Kawhi. I think the Spurs are going to be like, we want Kuzma. Even though Josh Hart would be valuable to them and to almost anybody else, I just don't see it in that same fashion. Also, I don't see Josh Hart conflicting with LeBron.
Right.
And that's the other way that this could happen, is it's not just, oh, you're dumping them in a trade. It could just be, this is LeBron's team now. Player X doesn't work. And I think that's significantly more likely for all of the other three than for Josh Hart. And I would say Brandon Ingram, I would have Ingram over Lonzo in terms of the most likely for that specific conflict, because we saw Ingram looked best with the ball in his hands, and that's not going to happen a lot with LeBron there.
Yeah, so certainly defensively, if he can grow into what they hope he can be, Ingram is a nice fit. And remember, the Lakers, they made their big strides defensively already last year. Yeah, I would say Hart to me is the most likely to still be there. I would agree with you. I would say either two or three of them won't be around anymore. And I would say that Ingram is the most likely to not be there because A, he'll be the most coveted. He also has one of the bigger salaries, and so probably has to be included for that as well. I would say that Kuzma is number two to not be there, as a guy who kind of needs the ball in his hands, isn't that good defensively. The fit there is a little questionable. And then Ball, just because it seems like you'd almost have to be trading him at the nadir of his value, and he's still, I think that they're probably bigger believers in him than everyone else, would be third, and then Hart would be fourth. But obviously, you know, a long way to go in this saga. Is this what you would have done if you were in LeBron James' shoes?
Yeah, I think it is. He's looking at the long game, and I never liked the fit of LeBron in Philly. I never wrote the piece that I wanted to write about how I thought the Sixers should prioritize Paul George over LeBron, just because the idea of complementary talent versus transformative talent. But I feel that way. I still do. And there wasn't really another fit for James that made a ton of sense. And what the Lakers can offer that these other teams cannot is the prospect of getting somebody else because of the gravity of the franchise. They were good enough to, you know, they drew LeBron in, they will have cap space, they have young assets, they can bring in somebody else. Now, I'm not sure they can bring in enough to be the championship favorite for a given season. That's going to need a lot of improvement, some good fortune, which could happen, but is far from definite. And, you know, LeBron, I think he's probably looking at kind of the end stage of his career here. I mean, 3+1, we don't know where he'll be at that point. We don't know, you know, in everything, but I understand why he wanted to look for a more long-term solution, didn't want to be a ring hunter. And he's now invested in this, and he's a part of this process that might not work out, but I do really like this. I think there's a poetry to it that I appreciate.
Yeah. And I said this on Twitter. I'm really happy that he picked the Lakers. I would probably most like for him to pick Houston, just because that matchup with the Warriors would have been epic, but that seemed like it was never really in the cards. And at least it's interesting now. You know, I was just so sick of seeing him, especially last year on that Cavs team that you just knew didn't have a chance. And it was the same old conversations. Oh, are they going to hit their threes? Is Kevin Love going to be good enough defensively? And I just didn't want him to be there anymore. And he had no chance of winning the championship there. All the sagas with Dan Gilbert and the drama, and I was just like ready for it to be over in Cleveland as a neutral fan. As a Pacific time zone fan, I'm happy to be able to see more LeBron games out here. It also means that like all those Laker games that are on national TV that sucked because the Lakers weren't any good, although last year they were really interesting, but now are incredibly interesting again. The rivalry with the Warriors, and that's just going to make like Giants Dodgers look like child's play at this point now, this is really the first time just about ever that the Warriors and Lakers will both be good. They've had some playoff matchups, but not really one where they're both really good teams. I mean, those games are going to be awesome. And then going back to the question of, you know, what I would have done in his shoes, I mean, a lot of it too is there's the entertainment aspect. I think, you know, it could be that owning a team someday is a more important goal for him even than winning more championships. I would totally understand if that were the case. And LA, both for entertainment, the connections, much easier to get involved with the investments in Silicon Valley on the West Coast as well. So and also just being in LA, he's got a home there. It's much easier to be a celebrity in Los Angeles. There's so many of them. There's a degree of sanity to actually like seeing celebrities around, which you know, most places just go crazy. Yeah. So I'm glad that he's in LA. I'm really looking forward to seeing how it's going to mesh with this team. And we just, you know, the possibilities are fascinating as far as trying to get more talent around him, whereas Cleveland really just didn't have the assets to do that any longer. All right, let's do a quick read here and we'll get to, you know, the rest of the league right after this from Blinkist. We try to give you as much knowledge as we can pack into a program here. We even edit out the silences. We want to make our product as efficient as possible to get as much information into your brain as possible. And that's why we're so proud to have Blinkist as a sponsor. They provide blinks of a book. If you have a long list of books you want to read, but you don't have the time, Blinkist has the solution for you. They take thousands of the best-selling nonfiction books and distills them down to their most impactful elements. You can read or listen to them in under 15 minutes, all on your phone. I actually kind of was talking to a friend a few years ago about how it would be so awesome if this product existed, because really if you're reading for knowledge, how much information are you actually retaining out of a book? You know, probably not much more than 15 minutes worth, right? So rather than slog through the whole thing, you can get all of that key information in just 15 minutes. Their library is massive. It's constantly growing. You can find timeless classics like Think and Grow Rich to current bestsellers like Fire and Fury. If you have a 45-minute commute, you can get the information from three books. You can get those key insights. If you're working out, if you're doing the dishes, you can get yourself smarter with Blinkist. The way to get started with them and get a free 7-day trial is at Blinkist.com/capspace. Easy to remember that /capspace URL, because we've been talking about it ad nauseum on this podcast. Blinkist.com, Blinkist.com/capspace to start your free 7-day trial. That's Blinkist.com/capspace. Let them know that /capspace URL that you came from us. Let's turn to the Cleveland Cavaliers. We don't need to spend a ton of time on them right now. The initial reporting,
it'll probably be a while until we spend a lot of time on the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Now, Danny, we do 15 and 60. We do season previews.
I said a lot of time. I didn't say no time.
I mean, I think we'll be spending more time on them than just about any other podcast. We'll put it that way. So it's been reported that with their arena renovation being complete this year, that they want to hold on to Kevin Love, see if they can compete. I don't know about that. Surprisingly enough, after the best small forward in history just left the team, they have a giant hole at the three. They are $6.2 million over the cap now in James's absence. And that's not including the non-guarantees that they had. They have Colin Sexton, of course, as the eighth pick. He'll surely get plenty of run this year. And being $6.2 million over the cap, that gives them $15.6 million to work with before they get to the tax. And there's no way in hell they're going to pay, because remember, they're in the repeater tax for this team. What can they do with that money? Well, you could give Rodney Hood a new contract. They still have to fill out the roster with minimum. So you could probably give Hood about $13 million or so to still avoid the tax. Of course, they could make cap clearing trades later in the year as well. Although they're pretty much out all of their second rounders. And then they also have a top 10 protected first that they owe to Atlanta in 2019 and 2020. Atlanta, a big loser with James leaving, because you could see that pick being in the top 10 both those years and then just reverting into 2 seconds. That's from the Kyle Korver trade years ago. Or they could use the full MLE and the BAE, which they should have room for still under the tax barely, and move on from Hood. And of course, as we mentioned, they desperately need a three. Anything you'd say about their strategy? We did a whole podcast, obviously, or not a whole podcast, but a whole section on their offseason and what they should do if James left. But, you know, assuming they're trying to compete this year, which I don't think they should be, but that seems to be the rumbling so far. Anybody you think they might target with their mid-level exception, or would you just try to re-sign Hood and call it a day here?
I mean, you could look at, you know, somebody. I would be looking more at somebody who you could get on a multi-year contract at a reasonable price. Those might be available. Somebody like Ennis or Travion Graham, especially Graham, because he's young enough that you could end up getting him on a multi-year contract. The Glenn Robinson contract we'll talk about a little bit later. You know, at least the Pistons got a second year out of it. I would maybe even try to get more than that. Be looking in that direction. One other thing I want to note is that the Cavs have a trade exception from the Kyrie deal for $5.8 million. That could be used in a couple different ways. It could be to get somebody who a team just doesn't really want at that price, or maybe it's even debtor money and they get an asset in return, which they can use in the future. It could be a nice piece, another way to use some of that big margin between their current salary and the luxury tax.
But that would probably preclude them from using either the full MLE or taking on Hood unless other moves occurred.
Yeah, it's possible. Yeah, and I think other moves will happen at some point, whatever those are.
Well, if they want to strip mine here, and Korver, maybe he would have some value. He's $7.5 million, $3 million guaranteed next year. and Love are really probably the only guys. Maybe George Hill could help someone as a $19 million expiring contract, essentially. Tristan Thompson, they might try to move, you know, maybe they could move him for, you know, a Jan Mahimi, someone who's even worse. You know, I think they definitely should be strip mining, especially to ensure that they keep their pick this year. But, you know, I think more likely is they're going to start off the year pretending to compete, suck, and then try to move these guys at the trade deadline and not get as good of a draft pick and be right on the borderline of maybe losing that. But we've seen them fall off so badly without LeBron before that maybe it'll just happen regardless of whether they want it to or not.
Yeah, I could see Gilbert trying to push a little bit and seeing what they could do and just finding out they can't. I mentioned this before that it's kind of the, I would enjoy the Garfield minus Garfield idea of this team of just trying to run it back and not have LeBron James and see what happens. I think they would lose just offensively.
It would be a fascinating experiment for me to just to try to get an idea of what the worth of LeBron was.
Yeah. And so for that purpose, and yeah, I mean, the Nene test for Cleveland is not a good thing right now because, you know, Love, I think, has value to certain teams, but that player option, some teams might feel queasy with that, especially with his injury history.
Yeah, he has $24 million this year and $26 million next year, essentially, in that player option.
Yeah, 25-6. Yeah. It's close to damn enough. And yeah, and then George Hill, 19, with a small partial for the year after. JR has a small partial guarantee. Korver. So I mean, it will be challenging if they try to unload them. I mean, it's probably going to take assets or, as you said, taking on bad money. That is the other way to make this work.
Well, I'll tell you what. If I'm Kevin Love, I sure as hell want to get traded this year so I can go somewhere that'll re-sign me, because I don't know that there's, I mean, it's going to be a robust market next year, but I don't know that there's anybody who's going to pay him just in straight cap space, you know, $26 million next year. I mean, you're much better off probably getting somewhere that wants you. You opt out, but then, you know, you re-sign for a longer term deal at, you know, maybe a little bit less on a per dollar basis. He'll be 31 next offseason.
Yeah, and he's also technically, if he can try to make a move early, he's extension eligible.
Sure, so that's a great point.
Depending on whether it fit within the terms of an extended trade or if they just had to wait the 6 months, if they did it early enough, they could make that happen.
And even JR, like, you know, he's $3.9 million guaranteed in 2019. He actually, you know, it could be another option of like, all right, I can help a team a little bit. And if you want to send me, you know, hey, Portland, if you want to send Evan Turner here, we'll send you JR Smith. He'd probably help you more, though Portland might not agree with that, but I think I would. And, you know, they still have Jordan Clarkson at 12.5 and 13.4 million the next 2 years.
I don't know. I think you need to keep Jordan Clarkson to preserve the tank, because he's going to be a centerpiece to them keeping this pick.
Yeah, and Zach Lowe wrote the piece that you can check out of just, all right, how did they get here? Oh, and by the way, Feldman has this, actually. If they fill out with minimum contracts, they could give Hood only up to $11.3 million. So the margin's a little bit tighter to stay below the tax again, unless they made other moves. I mean, obviously, the Kyrie trade was miserable. But we, you know, we thought that was as good as they could do at the time. But not having not having the organization to him back into the fold when he went off the reservation last summer, it was difficult.
Right, and it's always important with a lot of these deals to keep in mind where things were at the time. I mean, like, there's been a lot of revisionist history that's happened with the Paul George trade in kind of now in both circumstances. You know, it originally looked great for Indiana and shaky for Oklahoma City. Now it looks great for both teams. It's always healthy to remember what it was. And so, I mean, at that point, we didn't know how broken Isaiah Thomas was. That Nets pick, you know, they didn't have the incentive to tank. So I didn't think it was going to be 8. I thought it was going to be more in the 5 range, if memory serves. But yeah, that looked like the best return if they felt that they had to trade Kyrie Irving. And we'll never know probably for sure whether they really did have to, but it certainly is leaning in that direction. But yeah, I mean,
well, and then giving up the future first to, I mean, yeah, okay, they like kind of saved their season and they got to the finals and barely, but basically no one that they acquired in that trade contributed at all in the playoffs. I mean, that was really a disastrous trade to give up Jay Crowder and expiring contracts, take on Clarkson and give up a first as well to get Nance. I mean, just the opportunity cost there. I mean, there had to be better deals out there than that. And maybe, you know, I didn't think the Warriors were like invulnerable, especially with Iguodala not playing those first two games. Maybe they could have actually had a good enough performance against the Warriors that LeBron wasn't just like, all right, it's totally hopeless here, had they done a better job with those trades. And to everyone who is saying what a great job they did with those trades, would you care to revisit that opinion, please? Should we move on from Cleveland? We'll have, unfortunately, plenty of time to discuss them later.
Yeah, let's go to the Orlando Magic. The Magic signed Aaron Gordon, restricted free agent, who was seeing potential suitors drop off the board over the course of July 1st, signed him to a four-year, $84 million deal, no options on it, and a note that you and I both independently made on Twitter about 45 seconds apart. The Magic should absolutely front-load this deal because they have enough wiggle room under the luxury tax this season to make it happen, and then it just makes it a more palatable deal moving forward, whether he stays with Orlando or theoretically if they were going to trade him.
Yeah, and the difference that we're looking at here, I mean, I put in my projection that I did for Patreon that they'd just give him the standard 8% raises, but your range here over 4 years with the 8% raises is between $18.8 million and $23.3 million. And so you could start him at $23.3 million this year, and not only does that give you more cap space in future years should you want to use it. Yes, in fact, there will be a time, even maybe as soon as next year, where they could use cap space. And more importantly, especially because you already have John Isaac, who you really believe in, who plays the same position as him, if you want to trade Gordon, he becomes more valuable if his salary declines. And generally, the player won't be opposed to doing it that way because they'd rather get their money first. The one downside is that now that the extension rules are a little bit less draconian than they used to be, you might want to have a bigger number at the end of your contract so you can build off of that on your extension. But that seems like a little bit too attenuated as far as just getting more money up front. And I think for Gordon, 4 for $84, I mean, that's about what Victor Oladipo got a couple of years ago, although it was a different market at that time. That was in an extension for Oladipo rather than a free agent contract. But it was difficult to see at this point where his market was going to come from. The Kings don't really need a four. The Bulls have Lauri Markkanen already. He actually would have been an interesting fit with the Hawks, but the Hawks probably weren't really interested. And so with no real suitors out there, I think that this was a number that the Magic can feel pretty decent about, basically $20 million a year, a little over that, $21 million a year. And that Gordon is still getting life-changing money, even if it's not an enormous payday. Maybe there could have been a player option on the end or something. They had the ability to go 5 years that Gordon wanted to. So it's interesting that it only ended up being four, or maybe the Magic didn't want to go the 5 years. You do have to think that there are teams out there, Indiana, Dallas, that maybe could have made better use of their cap space. But the question is, would you have had to go to the max for Gordon? And that would have only been, another $20 million. Maybe the Magic end up matching it anyway. And then, you're waiting until July, 12th with all the physical shenanigans that teams should do that should really be outlawed. Because, you've had the player for 4 years. You don't need to give him a physical again. To delay things even more. But and then you're waiting until then to get your money, and maybe everyone else is gone. So I think those teams probably felt like, hey, we just can't risk that. We got to get Doug McDermott under contract if you're the Pacers. We'll see who else they end up getting. If they get Tyreke Evans, then it makes a little bit more sense. And so I think this is a fair deal all the way around for the Magic. And then their space now, they're essentially right at the cap, so they could have their full MLE. They'll have their BAE to use as well, should they so desire. They also, it turned out, stretched Shelvin Mack's $1 million guarantee for this year when they waived him back in June. And I think that's about all I have on them for right now. I think the Magic actually, we'll see what ends up happening with their center position. They may have other moves to be made. I still maintain that they should be trying to trade some guys for bad contracts to maybe help teams clear out space for 2019. They've got Vucevic, they've got Ross, who are expiring contracts that they could use to take on some of that bad money that doesn't expire until 2020. I think that would be my approach. They're no closer to contention. They still desperately need a point guard. DJ Augustin is their starting point guard, but there aren't really many on the market. Don't think they'll be knocking on Shabazz Napier's door after they traded him away for a top 55 protected first round pick to the Blazers, or second round pick to the Blazers. Anything you want to add on them, or should we move on?
We can move on. They do have a small trade exception they can use, but not a big deal. Let's go to a deal that feels like it was a lifetime ago. The first deal, I think, that was after we recorded. Fred VanVleet went back to the Toronto Raptors, 2 years, $18 million. That is about, it seems like the number is lined up with the highest they could have brought him back with early bird rights. And it's going to be fascinating to see what the Raptors do from here. Are they going to unload salary? Are they going to give up assets? assets to unload salary? Are they going to just kind of bite this for 1 or 2 years? I'm really interested to see where this goes, but I'm happy Fred VanVleet got paid. He was very, very good this year.
Yeah, this is basically the most they could have paid him over 2 years with their early bird rights for him. Interesting that it's only a two-year deal for VanVleet. That might be good to get back on the market in that 2020 when the cap will be $116 million and so much money is coming off the books. Although never discount the capacity of NBA teams to spend like drunken sailors when they have even the slightest hint of cap flexibility. Raptors now are $12 million into the tax, would be facing a $21 million tax payment. They have been loath to pay the tax before they got out of it last year, even if they're able to move on from Norman Powell. And remember, they got out of it last year by being willing to trade Damari Carroll into the Nets cap space and give up a first rounder. That probably turned out to be a pretty good deal because it only ended up being the 29th pick. Even though Carroll could still play a little bit. So maybe they move on from Jonas Valanciunas. Doubt they can find a taker for Serge Ibaka. I mean, that would be a lot of money to just dump Ibaka straight up into either, it would have to be either the Bulls or the Hawks space. They could take back a little bit of salary maybe if they wanted it to be the Kings. And, you know, the Kings could use another 4.5 on the roster. But Powell seems like the most likely to get moved as of this point. But VanVleet is such a good player. They had to keep him around. And maybe they'll just pay the tax or maybe, you know, they'll kind of see how the season is going and then maybe they can drop a little bit of money to reduce their tax payment, but it's looking like they're probably going to be in there. I mean, just moving on from Powell wouldn't be enough, and really I think the only way that they can get off of enough money would be by including a first rounder at this point. Good to bring him back, and especially with LeBron in the other conference. You know, I mean, they're probably looking like the second best team in the East going into next year. As of now, we'll see what Philly ends up doing.
Another important part of giving VanVleet 2 years is it largely lines up Toronto's books. So if we assume that Valanciunas picks up his player option, and obviously we don't know who's going to be on the team, Lowry, Ibaka, Valanciunas, and VanVleet now all expire in 2020. And then DeRozan has a player option for the following year. Norman Powell has another couple of years. So they could really be looking to retool this team at that point without too much on their books. And with the young players developing, that could, you know, those guys are going to be paid right around that same time. But it is interesting that they can't kind of maintain that consistency of a timeline here. And remembering that last year, Lowry and Ibaka got fewer years than many were anticipating.
In Utah, the Jazz did not waive Thabo Sefolosha. He was guaranteed $5 million for this year, despite the fact that he had that MCL surgery. And you know that's a bad MCL injury when you have to have surgery. Usually grade 1 or grade 2, you don't have to get surgery. It was an avulsion injury, which is where basically you tear part of the bone off that goes with the ligament. Usually more commonly seen than the ankle, from my recollection. But so with Sefolosha back, this augurs even more so, especially as free agents have come off the books here. And we'll go through, of course, who's left at the end of all this now, that the Jazz are going to try to stay over the cap. They met with Derek Favors today in Atlanta. The reporting is that the meeting with the Jazz is productive, but they had meetings with multiple teams and are expected to make a decision on Monday. We don't know who those teams are. I would be surprised if they're, you know, Utah can offer the most money. I don't know how long it's going to be because Utah is another team that could have a lot of flexibility in 2019 with Burks and with Rubio expiring. But even if it's over 1 year, you know, I don't think Favors had any kind of an offer for above the mid-level exception anywhere else. And so I think as long as Utah beats that, especially, you know, for 1 year, it would be a surprise to me if he doesn't return there. And then when you consider, now we said, oh, you know, they have his bird rights, they can pay him whatever they want for 1 year. There's a little bit of an opportunity cost there because they have, as of now, with no Exum and no Favors, they're $30.5 million below the tax and $36.5 million below the apron. And so you would want to bring back Exum and Favors and use the full mid-level if you could, or at least close to it, to fit into that $30.5 million. And I think they could probably do that. We'll see where Exum ends up. We'll see where Favors ends up. They still could get into the tax and then get out of it. Or they also have the option. They have $7.5 million in non-guaranteed contracts between Jarebko and Epe Udo. Hopefully for them, Exum and Favors can be resolved by the July 9th guaranteed date. states, they'll know whether they need to waive those guys to avoid the tax or not. Certainly Epe Udo, you would think, is the most expendable there. We'll see who they can get with the full mid-level, if anyone. Both those guys played roles, but they're kind of end of the bench guys. They might be able to do better than those guys. So that's where Utah is right now. Interesting that Cephalosha was guaranteed. We'll have to see what he looks like when he comes back next year, but certainly someone who could make their defense even more formidable. Where do you want to go next?
I think it's time to bring back everyone's favorite segment. What the hell is Portland doing? And this time it's not about something that just happened. It's basically a resolution of a question that we had, which is that Jake Lehman got guaranteed for this coming season, $1.5 million per Jason Quick. And it doesn't seem like it was moved back. We don't know. I don't think we know for absolute certainty that that's what happened. But holy crap, Mark Bartlestein, unbelievable if that's what ended up happening here, considering they moved on from basically everybody else on their bench. And Lehman was probably the worst guy on their bench.
Yeah, Lehman, just a horrible three-point shooter in his career. Some hopes that he could be a combo forward who could hit some shots and play some D, but just not even close to developing. And this is his third year already, as I change my spreadsheet to sadly guarantee him for next year. But the idea, I mean, Pat Connaughton, his qualifying offer was under $2 million. Napier's qualifying offer was 3.5, that you would hold on to Lehman and let those guys go. And you mentioned Mark Bartlestein, who is the agent. There's also a Bartlestein connection with Stauskas, who they signed for the minimum rather than Connaughton with the qualifying offer. Maybe they felt, I mean, I don't know where, maybe they just felt like Connaughton was going to take the qualifying offer or he was going to get an offer somewhere else. I don't know, but like, I don't think the Connaughton would have cost them that much more than Stauskas, considering he was restricted, if they had just been willing to play the waiting game there. And also worth noting that Zach Collins is also another Bartlestein client, and Zach Collins is really going to benefit with the departure of Ed Davis. Attention, of course, turns now to the Yusuf Nurkic situation in Portland. The Blazers have $7.5 million remaining below the tax now, with 12 players under contract, and that won't be enough to re-sign Nurkic unless he takes his qualifying offer. Doesn't look like any other signings are particularly imminent for Portland. If they did want to use the full mid-level exception, but were okay paying the tax still, remember, they got out of the tax last year by moving on from Vonleh. They have $13.6 million above the apron. So if they moved on from Nurkic, they could use the full mid-level. Unless they did something to move on from Leonard or Turner, they couldn't both re-sign Nurkic and use the full mid-level, probably under any circumstances. So that's where they are right now. I mean, they're going to count on Collins to step in at backup center and maybe some minutes from Leonard. They're going to count on Wade Baldwin to step in at backup point guard rather than Napier. I mean, I guess Lehman might have a spot in the rotation. They could still technically bring back Connaughton or Napier. They just don't have their restricted rights. So still, it doesn't really seem like we know what's going on with Portland yet.
Right. And I've had people, when I was talking about the Napier thing, say like, oh, well, they could bring him back with bird rights. It's like, well, yeah, but you lost an advantageous piece of bargaining there. Like, you could theoretically bring them back, but you would have scared off other teams. You could get them at a better price. And those qualifying offers were not at such a high salary that you would be worried about them taking it as being bad for the team. We should also, just briefly, and I think this works as a transition, talk about the glorious, like 2.5 minutes when we thought, thanks to a rare erroneous Woj tweet, that Mario Hezonja was signing with the Portland Trailblazers for $6.5 million. You and I went completely insane because of what that would have meant for Portland in terms of managing their cap, in terms of all these other things.
Yeah, being hard
but
capped,
alas,
and I was like,
it was amazing.
Yeah, that was
like all the like bad management stuff, like, oh, you know, like going all these directions. And instead, he is a New York Knickerbocker. They have fewer of these constraints just because they're not pushing up against the tax. They had the full non-taxpayer mid-level exception to use. However, as despite being the Archbishop of the Church of Hezonja, this is a great example of why bad teams stay bad, because the Knicks had a gargantuan advantage here by being one of the few teams that had the non-taxpayer mid-level exception in a year when basically nobody's getting paid. Like, that is a really good contract to be able to offer. And they got a player who isn't particularly great, who provides no future value because he's only on a one-year contract. So walk out of it with non-bird rights if he's, you know, if you still have him at that point. So you took something that could have been valuable and did about the least you could with it.
Yeah. Now, important to remember, Steve Mills said this, that their goal is to not take on any contracts past summer of 2019. This is yet another of these 2019 cap space teams, although when you still, and they'll stretch out Joakim Noah. So that should get them to around $35 million in cap space next year. And Courtney Lee is rumored to be very available as well. I don't know that they'll be able to just straight dump him. That seems pretty unlikely. His contract goes through next season as well. So, yeah, I mean, I like getting the young guy in. Second draft opportunity. Maybe you could just hope his experience goes well. You could keep him around. There's a little bit of, hey, you know, you really blossomed him here. Do you want to stick around? They also have no threes on this team. So he's got plenty of playing time opportunities. And supposedly a bunch of other teams were involved with him. You'd imagine that Portland's offer for him, if it was even this high, was for the taxpayer MLE, which is 5.3. So the Knicks beat that. They'll keep some of their mid-level exception open to sign a longer than 2-year contract for Mitchell Robinson, the big center that they drafted with a ton of potential in the second round. And they're supposedly still looking at Anthony Tolliver and Mike Beasley per Mark Berman. They'll also have their BAE available to use. No tax concerns here. They got still $16 million below the tax, even after the Hazonia signing. So they're hard cap, but they're not going to run into the tax this year, basically no matter what they do. They also signed Luke Kornet to a 1-year deal. No word on the guarantees yet. You'll remember he was a two-way guy for them last year. They're actually able to sign him for up to $1.6 million non-Bird off of, I guess, the 1-year minimum, 120% of the 1-year minimum, which, because he was on a two-way last year, somehow that's what the non-Bird amount is off of that. That was a little confusing for me. I'll have to get a little bit better of a handle on that. Where would you like to go instead? Or not instead, but now.
Let's go to Detroit. Detroit signed Glenn Robinson III to a 2-year, $8.3 million deal, so about four per. And the second year is a team option, which is a nice piece of flexibility for them, what I'm guessing they did, which I fully support. And something theoretically the Knicks could have done with Hazonia, considering they gave him $6.5 million, is they paid a little bit extra in the first year to get team control in a second. Firmly in support of that idea. Glenn Robinson had a largely lost year for the Pacers when they needed small forward help, and especially with his defensive capabilities, because of a really badly sprained ankle. And so I'm hopeful that he could just be a potential fix. You don't know if it's going to be for sure. And the other significance of this for Detroit is it looks like they're really close to done. Theoretically, they could do a couple of different things, but they have 13 players, including Reggie Bullock's non-guarantee, which everybody and their mother expects them to pick up because it's a great contract. Then they have Moreland and Bikes on non-guarantees, or they could just replace those guys with minimum contracts. And so assuming they use some of their mid-level exception to give Kyrie Thomas and Bruce Brown, their second-round picks, longer contracts, they're basically done. But I like what they did with the limited amount they had.
Yeah, I think this is just, it gives them another potential player, much like Reggie Bullock a couple of years ago, who might be able to develop. And Bullock had a nice season last year. If you're the Pacers, you had Glenn Robinson on a minimum cap hold. Why wouldn't you have just beat this offer? You know, and maybe Glenn just didn't want to go back there, but it would have just, and you would have had to pay money for the Pacers, but they're using cap room right now. And so they could have just paid Robinson whatever they wanted to. I mean, why not just offer him $5 million with the second year? It's been said it's team option. Sometimes it gets misreported and ends up being a non-guarantee. We'll see which one it is here for Robinson. But the Pacers had the flexibility because he would just have counted for the minimum until they signed him. He's a guy that they, especially if it was only for 1 year guaranteed, like, why not just break the bank on him? That's kind of free money for you if you're the Pacers. So maybe they just really don't believe in him, or he just really wanted to move on and felt like he had a better opportunity, especially with the McDermott signing. But with Lance out of town, you know, they probably had a need for someone who could defend on the wing. So we'll see, of course, who the Pacers end up getting with still their $14 million in cap space that remains. They guaranteed Darren Collison today, as expected, for $10 million this upcoming season. In New Orleans, Elfrid Payton will sign a 1-year deal with the Pelicans. We haven't gotten a number on that yet, but almost invariably when you just say, here a guy's going to sign, and then you don't hear the amount for like a few hours, that means it's the minimum and nobody is that eager to tweet it out, especially for a guy who was averaging triple doubles down the stretch of the season a couple years ago in Orlando. But looking like that, they still hope to bring back Rondo. But Payton provides a decent backstop, kind of Rondo-esque play. And maybe Payton can rehabilitate his career. New Orleans always needs bodies there. And also New Orleans, obviously, DeMarcus Cousins, really, he doesn't have any outs anymore. You know, so he's just negotiating whatever he can get from the Pels. And the Pels just have to do well enough here now to beat, you know, what might be a Lakers offer of $13 million. And, you know, that's probably a superior situation, obviously. So really what it's getting down to now, the Pels, if they wanted to use the mid-level level exception, they would have about that same amount to give Cousins. They could offer him, you know, maybe a 1+1 for $13 million and still barely stay below the tax. Whereas the Lakers, you know, probably would not want to offer that to Cousins with their 2019 aspirations. So yeah, I mean, the Cousins situation is really going to be something to monitor. I mean, the Pels really have this decision between Rondo and the mid-level or bringing back Cousins at this point. Where do you want to go next?
We can do the weird little saga with Brandon Jennings today, where it looked like his contract got guaranteed, but then it didn't get guaranteed. It got pushed back from July 1st to August 1st. This, I mean, not knowing, there could be greater context in terms of negotiation between player and team. Without that context, this looks like a dangerous proposition for Jennings, just because the market for backup point guards or third string point guards is going to thin out a lot over the next month. Teams, not only through free agency, but also by summer league being done, teams seeing a lot of guys that they maybe like. If Milwaukee cuts bait at that point, there might not be as many jobs there. Maybe this is kind of like, well, we're not trying, we want to keep you, but if the right opportunity presents itself, especially now that they've used a lot of their MLE, so maybe it's that sort of a thing. But it's still interesting.
Some housekeeping elsewhere. The Hawks waived Isaiah Taylor a couple days ago to avoid paying his $300,000 guarantee. He's someone who we've liked, but the ball just didn't go in the basket for him. Maybe you could even see him going back to the Rockets organization where he got his start in his career. He's still someone I would be taking a look at on that aforementioned backup point guard market. It'd be interesting to see where he ends up in summer league. Brooklyn moved Isaiah Whitehead's guarantee date back from the end of June to the end of July. He's recovering from wrist surgery. Really couldn't even get on the court when they were desperate for a point guard with Russell out. So I would imagine they're eventually going to end up waiving him. In Boston, remember how Robert Williams missed the conference call with reporters the day after the draft? And, oh, it was just a misunderstanding. Oh, now he overslept on his flight from Miami back to Boston and missed the start of summer league practice. Well, I guess, you know, we were like, oh my God, I can't believe this guy's falling to 27. Starting to become a little bit clearer now.
Just a little bit. And let's go to Dallas. So Dallas, we talked about a lot on yesterday's show about bringing in DeAndre Jordan. They did a piece of housekeeping by bringing back Salah Mejri at the minimum, so they can wait on that. And depending on how they structure this, there are a couple different options for Dallas at this point. They could probably still keep Seth Curry's hold if they waive Kyle Collinsworth. That's how Albert Nahmad has the numbers there. I have the numbers there too. They could also theoretically pay Dirk with, if they wanted to, they could pay Dirk with cap space, and then, you know, if they thought the room Emily was enough for Seth Curry, they could go that way. And then there are a couple of things, because they want to sign Jalen Brunson as well. So we'll see what they end up doing. But I think we have a pretty good idea of at least where this Dallas team is going to start next season.
Yeah, they've also got Yogi Ferrell's $2.9 million qualifying offer on the books that could open up a little bit more space for them. They could still get to as much as $8 million in space here if they were to give Dirk the room exception. And that $8 million, maybe that could get them something. We'll kind of go through who's left at this point, but that would be competitive, although it looks like they're 1 year deals only, but it looks like they could be competitive with teams offering as much as the full MLE. The Heat quickly signed former two-way player Derek Jones to a two-year minimum contract worth $2.94 million. The first year is fully guaranteed and the second year is non-guaranteed. That's Jones, you remember, started in the Phoenix system. And speaking of Phoenix, Devin Booker, Shams tweeted this. I mean, this is usually like, if Shams or Woj tweet something, it's because like the agent like wants them to tweet it. And so this was a little bit of a shot across the bow of the Suns. Devin Booker is best friends with Tyler Ulis and was apparently upset with the front office over the release of Ulis. Not necessarily even that he was released, it was later clarified, but just simply that he wasn't told about it. Nice job there, Phoenix. And this, to some degree, I mentioned that this is an intentional leak. Why would you want this to get out there? Well, because he's negotiating potentially this max extension for 5 years. And so if you make it seem like, hey, I don't want to be there, or just every little bit of leverage that you can get, it's like, oh well, here, you better assuage me by showing just how committed you are to me, because you just waived my best friend, right? So Booker and his agent Leon Rose are to meet with Rob Sarver and Ryan McDonough on Tuesday to see if they can hammer out that max deal, and maybe there'll be a small concession as far as like not a player option, or you know, if he were to make an all-NBA team this year, which seems exceedingly unlikely, but you know, he could take a big step forward. I maybe the Suns could. I I, I That seems unlikely, but certainly, you know, that's a matter of negotiation of whether he could get up to the 30% max if he makes an All-NBA and how they negotiate that, what the criteria are. Remember, Joel Embiid didn't get 30% max for making second team All-NBA, but would have if he made first team All-NBA. So that those are how the negotiations can work out. So this all just seems like it'll be water under the bridge eventually, but just a little shot across the bow in the negotiations there. What the hell is Philly going to do now, Danny?
I dealt with this problem in the mock-off season. It was challenging because you're sitting there going, well, you don't really want to necessarily give up their space. I'm much more intrigued on the idea of them acquiring Kawhi Leonard, just on the idea of, hey, we're going to be really good. Maybe he'll want to stay. But the problem is San Antonio's asking price is going to stay really, really high here. And so are you willing to give up real assets? You know, not as much like the Šarić and Covington, and Covington
like we
type
said,
of thing. But
with Ingram, I mean, I don't see how this deal happens. I mean, obviously Embiid and Simmons are not going to be in this trade, but I don't see how it happens unless they include Markelle Fultz.
And so then I think that becomes the bridge too far, and just what makes this fall apart is that there isn't really enough other stuff to throw in to make this work.
You wouldn't include Markelle Fultz? I mean, okay, yeah, I know Drew Hanlon is this big miracle worker, but man, I mean, the way his shot looked, it's pretty tough for me to believe that that guy is going to be like stroking it from three anytime soon.
If I had, it would depend entirely on what I'm hearing from Kawhi's camp. You know, if I thought there was a decent shot of if this year works out that he'd come back, yeah, absolutely, I would do that because Kawhi is that good. That gives you an unbelievable core moving forward. It also depends on Kawhi's health, but we've said that forever. And I mean, Kawhi, Simmons, Embiid, you can build a lot of things around that. You can get, you know, lots of different type of players that could work there. And yeah, so I would consider it if you know if the underlying factors looked good. And because Fultz is far from a certain commodity, I mean, he's not even going to play in summer league. We've talked about that before. So yeah, I still am a believer that Fultz can figure this out, that he can break the yips. But if Kawhi seems amenable to coming back, even if he's non-committal, but he's just kind of open to it, and his health is good enough where he's worth it, then sure.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the players that still remain now. You mentioned Kawhi first. Mike Wright did say on the radio in Chicago, that's the ESPN Spurs reporter, that he still believes it's possible for the Spurs and Kawhi to reconcile. That seemed interesting. But there also is some indication that Kawhi might consider signing long-term in Philly if it goes well. James Ennis, so unsurprisingly, as someone with a little bit of a 3-and-D pedigree, Ian Begley says that the Pistons have made Ennis a priority with their early bird rights. I don't know about that, since they just signed Glenn Robinson. They probably don't have much room left under the tax. They'd really have to pay the tax probably to have a competitive offer there. The Sixers, Rockets, and Nets are apparently also interested. I think he'd be a very nice fit in Philly or in Houston for that matter. And the Nets, how much money they'll have to offer will depend on the Dwight Howard buyout. The Sixers, how much money they'll have to offer depends on how much JJ Redick takes to come back, which we assume is going to happen. And the Rockets will, you know, probably have the minimum, or they might have some of their taxpayer MLE, but then they also have Luka Bamute, who we haven't heard much talk about at all there. Speaking of the Rockets, Clint Capela was supposedly meeting with the Lakers this afternoon. That was before the LeBron news came out. That's done now. There's no way they can offer him enough money unless they just moved on from Luol Deng. Nerlens Noel is apparently deciding between the Wizards, where you'd think he might start, depending on what happens with Dwight Howard if he goes there, the Lakers, where he also would have an excellent chance to start, and of course is a clutch client. The question there, of course, would be how much is it? Would it be the minimum, which is essentially all they can offer, but they could offer him a starting position if they hold on to Randall, or would they give him some of that Randall money? And then the Thunder, who certainly have desperate need for a backup center, but doesn't really make much sense to go there to me if you're Noel, because you're going to be playing behind Steven Adams, and there's also some interest from the Pels. Maybe you could start at center for the Pels if they move on from Cousins, but if they bring him back, no reason for Noel to go there. Should we just take a little survey of who's left in terms of free agents at this point? Maybe we can just go through by position here, and restricted,
yeah,
unrestricted, or unrestricted, restricted probably makes more sense there.
So there are no, in my opinion, there are no starting caliber point guards left. I think the New Orleans Pelicans would disagree with that, but you have, so on the unrestricted market, more in the backup realm, rotation realm, Isaiah, Rondo, Seth Curry, Ray Felton, Tony Parker, Napier, Devin Harris, Shane Larkin. And then on the restricted side, Van Vliet's gone now, so you have Dante Exum and Yogi Ferrell.
Marcus Smart as well, actually, is still.
Oh yeah, I count him as a two.
Yeah, no, I mean that's yeah, he's a little bit different. Yeah, also Howell Neto, who you imagine will probably be back in Utah as the third point guard. Among wings, really no starting caliber threes. Maybe Lukumba Mute might be the only one you could look at. Maybe James Ennis. Maybe Jeff Green. You know, among the unrestricted guys, JJ Redick and Avery Bradley at the two. Tyreke Evans available as well. Wayne Ellington, who I think could be a pretty good fit for Philly as he was in the mock off season to fill that Marco Bellinelli role. Dwayne Wade is still out there. Travion Graham is unrestricted. Jamal Crawford, Ian Clark, Pat Connaughton. That's probably about it. All there is there. And then we don't have to say all the restricted free agent wings because the only one of them who has signed so far is Aaron Gordon. And then what we got here at the big position, we don't need to go through all these guys, but some of the highlights maybe.
So on the kind of the starter line, unrestricted, Boogie Cousins, Derek Favors, restricted, Clint Capela, Yusuf Nurkic, both of whom are going to have some real trouble getting a market now just for offer sheets because of all these teams that are losing the money. And then highlights in terms of the rotation guys, Brook Lopez, Dwight Howard, Kyle O'Quinn, Alex Len, Mike Scott, and then Julius Randle, Montrezl Harrell, and Nemanja Bjelica on the restricted side.
Let's go through the teams now that we haven't talked about. We discussed, obviously, as we've gone through here, a lot of the space that remains around the league. Atlanta still sitting pretty with that $25 million. That's gone up a little bit with the Isaiah Taylor waiver. Boston and Atlanta would still have their room exception remaining as well. Boston, a little bit into the tax with Marcus Smart's $13 million cap hold. They'll have the taxpayer mid-level available and maybe the full mid-level if Smart moves on. Brooklyn, $5.6 million in space with more to come, presumably from the Dwight buyout. That'll be a very interesting negotiation. Charlotte is $11 million over the cap. They've got about $10 million to work with now. Below the tax, already 12 players under contract. They could potentially use their full MLE, or if not that, pretty close to it. Do you want to pick it up here?
Sure. So the Bulls have about $24.6 million to work with. Cleveland, we already talked about the wiggle room they have under the tax. Dallas, we already talked about. Denver, still way over. They haven't made a cost-cutting move. That could take some time.
Yeah. Unlikely Detroit. They use the taxpayer mid-level there. Same thing. Yeah, they do still have Detroit at this point, or if they did, I mean, they probably used the taxpayer mid level on Glenn Robinson already, so they're probably pretty much done except for minimums.
Right, they're probably pretty much there. The Warriors still have their taxpayer mid level; they're way over the tax, of course. And the Houston Rockets still have their taxpayer mid level to use, and they're over the tax, though not as much now that they're not bringing back Trevor Ariza.
Indiana, $14.7 million in space remaining, also have their room exception. The Clippers, $7.6 million in space, but more likely to operate as an over the cap team, utilizing their full MLE and the BAE, which is starting at $3.4 million this year. Can give out a 2-year contract there. That's with a projected waiver and stretch of Miles Teodosic, and that Indiana one is with a projected waiver and stretch of Al Jefferson. The Lakers, we've talked about. Memphis, about the same situation as Charlotte. They could use close to their full MLE, maybe the full MLE. Miami, probably looking at the taxpayer MLE. They're right about a couple million dollars short of the tax line here. Milwaukee have their BAE remaining after the Ilyasova signing. Also, of course, have Jabari Parker out there. They're about $10 million short of the tax right now. Minnesota, they've got their taxpayer MLE. Also could potentially bring back Nemanja Bjelica. They're almost right at the tax as well, though. And that's with projecting that Cole Aldrich, who is waived, will also be stretched.
New Orleans, we talked about earlier with kind of the choice they have to make if they want to stay under the tax. The Knicks are clean in terms of the tax, but they've already used most of their non-tax pyramid level on Hezonja. They still have the biannual if they want to use it. OKC, mile over. They do still technically have their tax pyramid level. I sincerely doubt they're going to use it. Orlando, to me, they look like a full, full mid-level. If they want to use the biannual, and then they have that small Elfrid Payton trade exception should they so choose. Philly, I mean, they could function as an over or under the cap team depending on a couple of different elements, one of them being who they can get and JJ Redick's money. They could clear about $26 million in space, 27 if they really wanted to go that direction.
Yeah, and if we talked about this yesterday, they could pay Redick and maybe Amir Johnson enough that they stay over the cap and then use the MLE and the BAE, though again, unlikely that would be for more than 1 year. Portland, we talked about. Sacramento, $19.5 million in space. They'll have their room exception as well. San Antonio used most of their mid-level $6 million of the $8.6 on Marco Bellinelli. They'll still have their BAE available and plenty of room below the tax to use that even after re-signing Rudy Gay. Toronto, a lot of players under contract. They're $14 million into the tax already, so unlikely that they would use the taxpayer MLE, although they do have it. Utah, we talked about. Washington is $6 million into the tax already and still has to fill out their roster, so seems unlikely that they would use their taxpayer MLE as of this time, but possible.
One that got skipped in our transitions, Phoenix, they have about $2.5 million left under, depending on what they do with some of their non-guarantees, and then the room mid-level, so they could add a couple guys there.
All right, thanks for noting that, and thank you all for listening. This has been another marathon for us. We greatly enjoyed this. LeBron James is a Laker. Can't wait to see how that works out. We still got the Kawhi thing going on, and we'll see tomorrow how many signings there are. You know, we'll probably just wait for enough to accumulate so that we can do a full pod, you know, whenever that is. It'll either be tomorrow or Tuesday night, probably. Might even go to Sacramento Summer League, try and check out Harry Giles in person tomorrow, right up the road here from the Bay Area. Anything you need to talk about before we go today?
I wrote a piece for The Athletic LA about LeBron and what the Lakers can do this year and next year, went into some of the details that we talked about. And then I did a piece on Kevin Durant's 1+1 for The Athletic. And I don't know if it's going to be at a point where I can publish it, but I'm working on a piece about larger July 1st takeaways, winners and losers and all that. I actually had a draft of it written in the middle of the day when it looked like nothing's going to happen. Then LeBron did LeBron things. And so now I have to rewrite it. So we'll see if I have time to do that tonight.
Yeah. And also we can do a little plug for ourselves here. Patreon.com/Duncan LaRue. I don't think there's been a single signing where it's taken us more than a half hour so far to post the salary sheets, except when Patreon went down for like 30 minutes today. Liam is helping out with that as well. So you get access to the exact salary sheets that I'm looking at as we go through this program. Free agent rankings updated in real time, writing little blurbs about each signing as well as they happen. So we're getting a lot of new subscribers. Really appreciate that. We're up to over 800 subscribers now. So it'd be awesome to get to 1,000 before free agency is over. And of course you get those mailbag podcasts. We still have relatively fresh mailbag podcasts out there from the very end of June that we recommend you listen to as well. You can get Danny's story time updates where he does audio versions of his pieces quite a bit. So a lot of little goodies there. It's just a great way to support the pod, especially if for some reason our sponsors don't work for you. So thanks again for the support, and we will be back either tomorrow or whenever there are enough signings for a pod. So we'll talk to you all then.